Today, the narrator is Delbert Hayward, and I'm the interviewer, Janice Reed. Today's date is October 12th, and place of interview is Walsh, apartment number 5. And today we're going to be covering, well, last week we talked about food, and today we're just going to go ahead and go into that. I have a few more questions. And we talked about the cultural foods of the Tsimshian, and Del explained but a lot of the foods that he ate growing up. And today I wanted to talk about, he had talked about 50% of his diet consists of native foods, and today I wanted to begin by asking him what are more of his the foods that more modern day types of foods, I guess Americanized foods, that he would prepare at home today. And then also, what are his thoughts about traditional foods compared to modern foods and the effects that they have on the younger generation as far as their consumption versus like Americanized, or you know what I mean, kind of foods, as far as different, not diseases, but illnesses or things like that, like diabetes, or if that's an issue with in your culture or not.
Okay.
So wherever you want to begin, I know that was a whole big, loud, big mouthful.
I recognize
so, well, if well, because we did talk about, you had mentioned 50% of your diet is still traditional foods for you, and so I wonder, like, for your kids or your grandkids, how much of their diet consists of traditional foods?
Okay, the different things that I run across in my lifetime as compared to what I eat and compared with what my kids eat, you know, I grew up with a majority of my foods was native foods. Fish, deer meat, a lot of different kind of fish. We did have rice and potatoes and vegetables as well, but predominantly it was all, you know, mostly fish. That is the most available food around. But you look at compare that with the way the kids eat now, and you look at their health problems now, you know, you don't know for sure that maybe a lot of the health problems they have now is anything could be related to the way they eat now as compared to the way we ate. Because you know, we didn't hear a lot about diabetes as we grew up. We didn't hear about cancer, a lot of that, you know. And it kind of seemed like it was just something that came about in maybe the latter half of my life. And it got worse and worse, especially with cancer and diabetes and high blood pressure and you know, things like that. It got worse. Is I don't have a big my personal. I don't have that much of a problem with it myself, and maybe it's because I pay attention to my health more than I did when I was a kid. You know, everything was dictated by your parents or grandparents, what you ate. Now, nowadays it's, you know, everything emanates from the modern culture now, as far as our kids go.
Mm-hmm.
It's new. You know, they drink a lot more pop than we ever did. They drink, they eat a lot more, you know, hamburgers than we ever did. It didn't seem like they... They don't eat a lot of vegetables like I think they should, especially fresh vegetables. Um, they eat a lot of candy and you know, because they're around like the McDonald's fast foods and all these other fast food stores that are around, and that's all, you know, Pizza Hut and all that, they bring a lot of pizzas.
Yeah.
I don't know if that had any, that would have any effect on them, but, you know, then recently I've been reading a lot, I subscribed to a doctor's, a guy by the name of Al Sears, subscribed to his website, and he puts out a lot of health alerts. And, you know, he points out where there are problems and points out whether we get the good foods and where we get the bad foods, things like that, and why they came about, you know. And a lot of it, I guess, because of the way the commercially prepared foods that are on the markets today, they use a lot of chemicals in their foods. During the processing, during the growing of all these different kinds of plants and stuff that are, you know, in the vegetable market and even the meat market, you know, and you hear a lot about it from time to time on the news. I think a lot of it, you know, there's a lot of negative things kind of that brought along why cancer came, you know, happened so much, it's so prevalent today. The other thing is diabetes, increase in diet, and obesity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, when you get into the nutritional aspect of foods, we've drifted away and over a long period of time, very slowly, drifted away from a lot of these foods that were good for us a long time ago that were grown naturally and that sort of thing, and that were very plentiful at that time, as I remember. And we didn't have a lot of these problems. We had other problems, you know, we had, as I grew up, the big diseases that were around back, you know, when I was young, tuberculosis.
Uh-huh.
It killed a lot of people. It's like the way cancer, you think of cancer today, and we haven't solved the mystery of curing that yet, but we're dumping a lot of money into it nationally, governmental-wise, trying to kind of come up with a cure. Now, the steps as we move toward that end, we come up with, temporary type remedies.
Or you mean like cancer, stuff,
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, you don't really, there's a lot of different kind of cancers. I found that out myself. I lost a wife to cancer.
Oh.
And because of that, I looked very deeply into it and tried to compare notes with different studies that have come up, you know, in cancer. And a lot of the, you know, the pharmaceutical industry is actually contributed a lot to the spread of cancer, I think. You know, just because they always have these side effects, you know, some are cancer related. You know, they'll do a good job on one specific item, but yet they always have these side effects. When you look at all the ads that come out, they have to report it that way now, and they used to.
Mm-hmm.
You just say, this is good for whatever, you know, they give it to you for.
Mm-hmm.
And they won't mention the bad side effects. Some of them are, and you look at the pharmaceutical industry, and you look at the survival rate of these people that take these pharmaceuticals, there's over 100,000 people a year that die from pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, it's from the side effects, you mean?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Side effects, and then, you know, and then it's compounded by the fact that, you know, a lot of these pharmaceuticals are put on the market way before they're really tested.
Yeah.
Fully tested.
Well, and they also say that there's, in a lot of our foods, that they're finding that can cause cancer,
right,
too. And
right.
So that was something that you probably growing up never saw pesticides used in your growing of vegetables or anything like that.
We never
used it. You
were
eating fresh meat, fresh vegetables.
Yeah, when we grew our own stuff at Haynes, I mentioned that, I think, in several of the meetings so far. We grew everything without these, all these pesticides and like that, you know, in Haynes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we never had a problem with it.
And so how about your children? How, like, do you mind if I ask, how old is your oldest grandchild?
About 24.
Okay, so that would include your grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
And how much of their diet consists of traditional native foods and
if I was to assign a percentage, I would say less than 20% is native foods.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And so out of all of what would be the highest consumed, probably, just out of curiosity, probably maybe fish?
Yeah, dried fish,
meals.
Seaweed. Most kids don't like the grease. I love it.
Your grandkids or your...
Yeah, all my kids and my grandkids. A lot of them don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them do, yeah. I mean, like my daughter loves it and my oldest son likes it because he lived down there where he comes from. And he likes fish, you know, just like I do. And
so he would have the same diet
but
as yours?
He also likes a lot of that stuff that comes from the modern culture. Hamburgers and french fries and, you know, all this stuff that's bad for you.
Yeah.
He loves that stuff too. And pop, man, they consume pop. They can put a case away in a week. Coke or Pepsi, you know. I can't drink it. Maybe once every 3 or 4 months I might sip on a can of pop, but that's about it.
And why do you suppose that is? Because you didn't have it when you were growing up, you think?
We had it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we had Cokes. Remember the old bottles that there's funny looking bottles a long time ago.
Oh,
there.
That's right. Uh-huh.
You know, they used to be only like a nickel or a dime a piece at that then. And we got a lot of it. And I liked it back then too. But I, you know, never, I don't know why, but it never, you know, when I grew up, I just grew away from like many things that happened, you know, you change your diet.
Changing. Yeah, that's true. And how about fixing, well, okay, so you were saying probably your oldest son, some of the foods would be, and your daughter, and dried fish, seaweed, as far as more of the traditional foods. Well, you said your son lives in Metlakatla now. Does your daughter live there too?
No.
No?
I just got one son that lives in Metlakatla, and the others are... I've got two of them down in Washington, Seattle area.
Uh-huh.
And I've got two of them up here. The daughter and one son.
So
they all, you know, that's one thing I did when we were never growing up. I took them home a lot.
Oh.
And they got to like it, you know, at a very small age, a young age. And so they develop a taste for it and continue to. And when I bring it back or I prepare, I put up a lot of fish in various ways, you know, dried, fresh, canned, pickled.
And do they do that?
Pickled. Yeah, they love it too.
The pickled fish?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Last time we talked, you were talking about pickled fish.
That's kind of to me, a recent development in my life.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, it's not something that I didn't know. You know, I didn't have it as a real young person. I didn't even have it during high school. You know, so it was kind of, it came along.
A new way to prepare fish?
Yeah.
Oh. When you were about how old?
I would say I was in my 20s or 30s before I came across it.
Was that, so was that here in Fairbanks then?
Yeah, up here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, you know, like 40s, 40 years old. We were Christmas shopping one time and up here in the, and they prepared a lot of that for sale. You know?
Oh, so Athabascan?
So I bought, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought it one time that way, and I like to buy it away, so I buy it whenever I can. It's not that dull.
Mm-hmm. So how about how you, as far as, what am I trying to get at? For, okay, let's say like for my family, my mom cooks all the traditional Mexican foods. She knows how to make a dish. It's menudo. They use that tripe, pig's fat and pig's feet, pig's tongue, to make a soup.
Mm-hmm.
And which I don't care for the tripe. I like the hominy, the big fat yellow corn that you use it, and I like the broth, but the fat I don't like. But I eat it at Christmas time, holidays, special occasions when she'll make it. I'll eat it, but I don't know how to cook it. And there's other meals I know how to prepare, like enchiladas and, you know, but like flour tortillas are a traditional food for us. Today you buy them in every market that you go to, but it's not the same as homemade flour tortillas. So I guess, but my mom, your generation, she knows how to prepare all these foods, but I haven't learned all of them. So like, which is too bad because they're so good. I wish I could have homemade flour tortillas every day. So I guess that's kind of where in doing, having these discussions about the food, that's why I do wonder, is that typical? And so do your kids, are they kind of losing that part of the culture as far as the foods?
They'll participate in eating it.
Uh-huh.
Most all of it, you know. There's certain parts of it, like I like fish heads. Okay, everybody's, how can you eat that fish head with that eye staring at me? That sort of thing. But you know that I used to think that way about when they roast a pig whole, you know. And leave the head and everything else. Yeah.
Yeah, my grandpa, that's how he cooked them.
Yeah, well, see that's the way I felt about the moose heads soup they have here up here for fall.
They put the whole nose? Head in the...
No, they cut it up, you know, they take the nose and they cut that up.
Oh.
And they put it in there and they... When I first potlatch I ever attended, you know, I almost let it cut loose right there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
No, I like it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of foods that we eat back home, same thing, you know. Like the fish head. My kids won't cut. A lot of the younger kids don't touch it. They won't touch it. I sit there and I'm trying to think of another thing that I like. We call it stink eggs. I don't know what the native name for it, the Simpson name is, for the stink eggs.
Oh, stink eggs?
Stink eggs, yeah. Uh-huh. And it is smelly. I mean, you know, you got to hold your nose if you've never had it before and swallow it. It's real bitter.
What kind of eggs?
It's salmon eggs.
Salmon eggs.
Salmon eggs. But you know, as a young kid, I developed a taste for it. Because when the old people would get together, you used to tell us this is only for old people, grandparents and stuff like that. So they'd gather around in the house, and we as kids would be playing around there, and we'd come in and smell all this stuff. You know, this is social gathering, you know, especially among the women. They'll come in and have a stink taste.
Hmm.
They'll serve and they'll eat it with dried fish and seaweed and all the native foods that we used to have. And you serve it with them. It's virtually the same thing as what is known as a caviar.
Oh, yeah. No, well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so eat it with what? Oh, seaweed.
Seaweed, fish, just about anything.
Yeah. How are they prepared? Do you eat them raw?
No, I don't know. I think they're just left out. I don't know. I think they're just aged.
Mm.
You know, left out in the open. Let them deteriorate.
Like just dry, just leave them out and
ferment?
No, they're not
dry.
No?
They're dry out. I don't know how it's done. I really don't. But I remember seeing in jars, you know, after it's prepared, and they can sit in them. They got a long shelf life.
Oh.
The same way with olive grease. I've got olive grease I've got that I bought in 2001, and it was kind of old then, yet it's still used.
Okay, I have a question about that. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah.
I have heard as that grease being referred to as hooligan, like H-O-O-L-I-G-A-N. Yeah. But isn't it Ulican or
Ulican.
E-U?
Hooligan.
Hooligan. How do you spell that? Do you know, Doug? Hooligan. I had read in an article.
O-L-I-G-I-O-N, I guess.
I had read it in an article on Assumption, where it was spelled E-A-U, L-I-C-H-O-N.
It's probably right.
And so I thought, here I've been talking about this hooligan grease all this time, or, you know, and it's the same. Okay. And so Native Alaskans probably all over different regions will get a hold of some of that grease, right? Or
No.
No? That's a different?
Among the Haidas and Simpson and Clinkets, yeah.
So southeast?
Yeah, southeast.
Hmm. Well, yeah, it was on a Simpson report that I had read on the internet. Yeah. Ulican is how it looks like it would be pronounced.
Okay.
And they called it the grease trails.
If you research that name, it probably the origin of the pronunciation of the original name won't even be recognizable by us today.
Yeah.
Like so many words. Yeah. It's that way. So,
but hooligan is okay?
Yeah, I heard that. I used to hear a lot of Navy guys use that expression, you know? Hooligan Navy.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what, that's also a southern, you know, the people that talk southern
mm-hmm.
use that word. It almost sounds the same, but it's not, that's not what it, you know, the same hooligan that we're talking about. That's not the same thing.
Oh.
But I remember them saying hooligan, you know.
With an H.
Yeah, but I heard that very same name used in description or in place of the hooligan.
Oh.
Yeah. And some of the guys back home still, you know, you hear them say that.
Yeah, I've heard, you little hooligan, little troublemaker. Huh, really? Yeah, I like that.
Uh-huh.
Hmm. And so you say your kids, they eat that then, or no?
Say what?
Do they eat the grease
too?
Oh,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They do, but I know my daughter loves it too. Because when I go down there, I always buy some and I bring some back and make sure all my kids get it.
That was going to be my next question. Is it readily available? You being so far from home, you have to go down there to get it.
Mm-hmm. What I did when I started going home by way of the Cashier Highway, I used to stop by. In Terrace, there was a place where that was sold by a family there to process it. They fished it there in, I forgot the name of this river now, but they lived right close to the, you know, Terrace is right close to where this river is. Nass River.
Oh.
Nass River.
N-A-S-S, huh?
Yeah, that's close enough.
Okay.
And what happens is those fish, like many of those little fish like that, come in, spawn, just in a day or two, and go right back out again. And those people that fish it have to be right there, ready to fish. in a short period of time, and they process it right there on the beaches or those camps. And the way they do it, I understand, is they have these great big vats, just boil it.
And is it fish or is it?
It's a fish.
Huh?
It's a little, there's a lot of fish that are around. There's one that's called a candlefish. It looks very much like it. Because that's, you know, about 6-8 inches long. And they almost look transparent. You know, you could hold the body up against the light and you can see the light come through it. Very, the entire fish is almost fat. All fat. That's what grease is fat.
And what was the name of the fish?
Hooligan.
I know that's a stupid question, but I had to ask just to verify it.
Hooligan.
Okay, so the entire fish is almost all fat.
Yeah.
And so they catch those and they boil them?
Yeah, the Nass River Indians do that when they're preparing. And it's like a tradition. They're the only people that process it.
Are they Canadian?
No, the Canadians, they're part of the Tsimshian people. They call them the Nass River people.
Hmm.
And like I say, they're the ones that, they're our source of hooligan grease. So when I went over there, I went to this family, I went to this house, called them up because they advertised it. And I had to buy it from them with Canadian money. I had to do the exchange at a bank. But it saved me money. When I go there, I try to buy all my stuff there for car parts and things like that, you know, tires, before I come over.
Mm-hmm.
Or when I'm going through, I'll try to buy all that stuff. Because I'm going to save 30-40% of it.
Is that because of the American dollar versus Canadian?
Right. Mm-hmm. So I bought $300 worth of that hooligan grease in Canadian, $300.
Mm-hmm.
And American money, it cost me $180.
100, how much?
$180.
Oh. Somebody's at the door, I'm going to stop it for a minute. Okay, so you bought it at $300 worth of, well, Canadian money, and then $180 U.S. dollars.
Yeah. So when I saw it on my credit card,
you didn't rip them off, you just got a good deal. So how is it, they come in jars then?
When we buy it from the people, yeah. Quart jars.
And so for that $300 Canadian, how many quart jars would you get?
Gee, they sold it in big gallon plastic containers, and some of them were in quart, like, you know, the Kerr or...
Kerr jars?
Ball jars.
Mm-hmm.
That kind. And we went in this guy's house, and he had it all stashed underneath the steps of his two-story building. All that, so pick whatever you want. Because see, they come in various grades, I guess you'd call it. Some of them are dark, some of them are, you know, from one end to the other, in various shades of brown, and up to almost white. They're a cream color, like that refrigerator.
Uh-huh.
But the dark brown, maybe, like that.
So what makes the difference there?
Okay, when you're boiling it, the darker one, they'll take off the dark part first. While it's still dark, all of it's still dark, they'll dip part of it out and then continue boiling the rest of it. I've got lighter and lighter. And maybe there's 3 or 4 different lightness until you get to what they call the gold color, which is, you know, oh, like that.
Mm-hmm.
Gold colored, that's the favorite.
The gold color?
And it takes longer, you know, boil longer to get to that level.
To takes longer. Didn't you mention in class too that it matters on like how much blood is in the water?
Yeah, I think that's probably,
and that's,
you know,
the color?
They don't gut them or nothing.
A whole fish, boil?
Boil it all together. And get all the guts and everything in there.
So if you like it with more blood in it, then you would take it out
earlier, sooner?
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. And how do you prefer it?
I like the gold.
And
but I like the other two.
So what's the difference in the taste, do you suppose?
It's stronger. It's got a more bitter taste in the dark.
Hmm. Pretty interesting. And you could use it for
almost
anything
that you like. You use it for, well, a long time ago, I guess you used, like to use Crisco, you know, for boiling my frying and all that stuff.
It's
too expensive.
I was going to say, yeah.
So we use it for select, more for flavoring now.
So it enhanced, like if you had like your dried fish, you would dip it in that to enhance the flavor to like a delicacy.
Yeah, first we lick the fish and have salt in on a plate or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then dip it in that oil.
So the oil would stick to the salt? That's why you would dip it in salt, or all part of the
flavor?
No,
you could do that. What we do is you put it on the fish, you know, and get a little moist and stick it in the salt and then the grease.
Oh. And in class you mentioned that you have a tablespoon every day out of that hooligan.
Mm-hmm.
And just as a treat, or is there a health benefit?
I believe there is a health benefit because I think I told you guys about it saved my legs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there's got to be some kind of health benefit there.
So you would do that as like a daily supplement, like people take vitamins then?
Yeah.
And how often would you say you said you pass, you get it when you do go down there and you buy it. Is that like an annual thing, or share it with your kids?
No, that time it was my dad's potlatch. A lot of times when people do that too, they go across there and trade with them. They take some dry goods over there, you know, clothing, all different kinds of clothing, shoes, stuff like that. Trade with them. That was done a long, long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after meeting the cost. Barter, you know.
And today you barter.
I remember that happening even when I was a young boy. There was a boat that used to go down there. You remember his name? It was Theodora, Charlie Ryan. In fact, that guy that Ryan that made one of those masks, his dad.
The carver?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Bert Ryan.
Bert Ryan.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
His dad used to go across there.
Oh.
And trade with them and bring it back and sell it to the people back home.
Oh, bootleg hooligan.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you ever run out?
Yeah. I don't, not anymore because I bought a lot of it. I probably have over a gallon in my house now.
How long will that last you?
Well, probably. Oh, I died.
Really? Okay, well, it looks like my time's up with you, Del. Thank you again for sharing all this great information. We'll see you next week.